This is the Relevant Podcast.
What is up, everybody? You are listening to The Relevant Podcast. It is episode 1019. I can't believe it. That's a lot of episodes. My name is Jesse Carey, and because you're hearing my voice and not Cameron Strang's voice, who typically hosts the show, he's in Israel this week. You know, it's a very special episode. I was talking to the team beforehand. It's the Outback episode. No rules, just right this week. So get your nice steak knives ready. Get ready to tear in to some blooming onion. The show's already in the ditch. And here with me from Nashville, Tennessee, Derek Miner. Derek, what's going on, man?
Bro, I can't remember the last time I ate an Outback, so is it good?
I don't know the last time anyone's... I'm convinced Outback and a lot of chain restaurants are just money laundering schemes, because I don't know who's going to them. But let's hold that topic, because I do want to dig in on that. Here with me also is, I think, from Texas right now. She's kind of roaming around the country, is our good friend Emily Brown. Emily, how's it going?
It's good. I'm in Dallas right now, or like North Dallas area. So you were right. Texas it good. Is.
Well, hey, we got a really great show. In addition to a coming conversation about who actually eats at Outback Steakhouse anymore, we have, as always, Relevant Buzz, Editorial Question of the Week, and joining us today is our good friend, Deb Folletta, who's going to be talking about how to navigate holiday relationships. You know, this is a complicated time of year. And Deb is a great relationship expert and a good friend of the show. But before we get to the rest of the show, Derek, I do want to address something.
What up?
Your lack of enthusiasm for Outback Steakhouse. When do you think the last time you've been to an Outback yet?
I think for me, it was 2008.
2008? Over a decade?
Yeah. It's been a minute, bro. Like, I'm talking years. I don't know. But I'm talking years, dog.
Do you have a chain restaurant take? Like, is it just Outback that you haven't been to? Because, well, listen, I don't have any negative experience. I feel like I can't even remember the last time I've been to Outback. I'm certain I have been, but I don't know where off the top of my head an Outback is. Like, I'm assuming there's, if I just drive around to strip malls.
I haven't seen one in the wild.
That's what I'm saying. I haven't. Like, so here's my thing. I don't like chain restaurants. Well, I won't take that back. If I have a choice between somebody who's cooking the steak, and if it's not amazing, then you know what?
Yeah.
Their business is going to go under. Or the 16-year-old in the back that this is their first job, I'm going to choose the guy who their life's on the line every time they cook a steak, because I know that it's going to be right. Customer service is going to be correct. Little Trevante in the back flipping fries and stuff.
It's low stakes.
And cooking steak. I just don't know. So I'm not saying, as I'm saying, I don't know if that's out. I mean, Outback, every time I've gone, it's been a pretty decent experience, but as far as just chains in general. But I'm going to add one more thing too, bro.
Okay. Let's
first
hear.
First off, I'm an anomaly.
In what way?
I am a black man. I'm a black man that does enjoy Arby's. I know there's a thing that black people are like, we don't collectively. Me and Kev on stage, we both enjoy Arby's. But and I always used to get, because Arby's parking lots are always empty. They're never, no one's ever there. So what you saying that
something.
It's a front for money laundering or drugs or whatever.
Who's going to Outback? That's my question.
I used to be like, there's no way people are not going to Arby's. Then I pulled up and I went to go get me, it was late, you know what I'm saying? I'm saying, man, I'm just going to get me a beef and cheddar, see what's going on. They said, we are only accepting cash at the moment.
Yeah, dog, at the moment.
At that moment right then made me say, yeah, they moving drugs, bro. It's a laundering scheme, because they don't want people here. Mm-hmm. They don't want people here.
Because look, man, I don't know how you inventory a bunch of meat, right? Like, you got to throw it out at some point. Like, it just seemed like if a bunch of roast beef just went unaccounted for, I don't think the IRS is coming to look, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I do feel like if you are trying to wash some cash, what a better way than a fast food place. Now, Derek, I do find it interesting that you like it, because I used to be a big time Arby's guy back when they had, like, this is like when I was in high school, the 99 cent menu, because you could for like $6, uh-huh, you could get a tremendous amount of curly and a Jamocha shake, curly fries. Oh, it was solid. But yep. I feel like Arby's went through this thing where, you know, you see the sandwich on the commercial and it's these like layered, you know, meats, and it's stacked high, and it looks like off like a foodie Instagram account. Then you're like, oh, you know, how bad could it be? And like, right, there's little portions of cheese just like slightly coming out the side. You order it and you unwrap it in the foil, and it looks like someone in the kitchen stepped on it. Like, it is like the, I get the heat lamp thing. I get like the temperature's going to be a little awkward. Like, it's slightly warmer than room temperature, which I want my sandwich hot or cold. I do not want it like that warmish, you know? But the fact that it looks like someone, like, literally before they handed it to you, put it in their hands and just started clapping as hard as they could. And they're like, here's your sandwich. Is that your experience with Arby's?
It's like a guilty pleasure, I'm not going to lie, because you're right. You open it up, especially if you get a beef and cheddar, and they have, mm-hmm, the French onion roll, but the onions are always like black. It looks like it fell on the floor. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it fell on the floor, somebody stepped on it, it smashed down. But you know what? It tastes good to me. Like, it tastes good to me. Like, I'm not going to lie.
It looks like a sandwich you could get in the foil and put in your back pocket of your jeans and walk around with all day. And if you ate it later that night after it's been in your back pocket, it would have the same warmth, because it's about body temperature. They keep them under the heat lamp. Like, it's about the temperature of the human body. That's good for digestion. It seems like it'd be good for digestion. That's a fact. I don't know, but I'm just pontificating here. But it seems like it's about the temperature you would keep the sandwich. And if you were walking around with that sandwich and maybe you sat down a couple times, oh, shoot, I got my Arby's in my back pocket. Let me get this out. It's like sitting on a set of keys. It's basically the same as it coming out fresh and from the kitchen. That's been my experience at Arby's. Emily, if you are in like any town USA, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know the good mom and pop trucks, the good mom and pop places around. You don't know like the local haunts. You don't know where all the cool food trucks are. You're going to a chain, and it's lunchtime, and you got a little coin. Let's say you're looking to spend about $25, okay? Ooh. Because we're well established chili stands on this pod, yeah, over the years. Like,
are we?
I am.
You got beef? You got beef with chilies?
You got beef with chilies, but not Arby's?
I don't necessarily got a beef with it. When y'all say stands or fans, I have a different kind. I'm like,
I mean, as Jesse was setting up that question, I was getting ready to say chilies.
Yeah, but I feel like this is just my take. There's tiers to the chains, for okay? Sure.
Okay.
The top, it's obvious. It's Chili's and it's Olive Garden. Okay. The bottom is the Bennigan's.
The top.
That's the tip. That's tippy the top. Tippy top.
That's at the very, mm-hmm, top of the, mm-hmm, of the chain. Yeah. Longhorn isn't
Texas Roadhouse, Longhorn.
Texas Road.
Slight notch below. Slight.
Just because I don't know if those
below
are as big.
Below?
I do like Texas Roadhouse a lot. That cinnamon butter gets me every time.
It's because if it's acceptable to throw peanut shells and garbage on the floor, sorry, you're going down a notch. All right. I'm not eating at a barn. Okay.
This isn't a circus.
Like, it's like I'm eating at a circus tent. Okay. I don't want to have to like wear like not good shoes to go to pay to eat somewhere because people are just disposing of rib bones and.
But Longhorn to me feels a little more elevated than Chili's, don't it?
I don't think the food. I think you got limited options.
Chili's is good because you do have, like, you can go there and literally everyone can find something.
You got a lot. This is true. Yeah, those little Southwest, mm-hmm, egg rolls are crazy. Yeah.
I feel like
those joints are fire.
It's a variety. That's the thing. It's variety. But it's a fine line because then you got like the Cheesecake Factory.
That's what I was going to say.
where they give you a telephone book. They basically give you a telephone book. Like, here's the
Cheesecake
menu.
Factory might be at the top for me, actually. I love a good
piece. You said what? Maybe at the top?
Cheesecake Factory. That might be at the top.
Emily.
I've never said that I had a good palate.
There can't be a place that specializes in making Italian food, Asian food, Mexican food, and cheesecake and do it all well. They gonna drop the ball somewhere.
There actually can be, and it's called the Cheesecake Factory.
No. No. No.
Hey, I know the secret of the Cheesecake Factory, okay? Why everything, you know, seemingly tastes good. A dude back in the day, I was actually living in Orlando. The dude who lived across the street from me in the apartment complex. We got to know each other. And he was like, he was a chef at the Cheesecake Factory. And he was like, hey, I'll come, me and my wife will come over. I'll make everybody dinner. I'm like, sweet, man. I'm going to get a Cheesecake Factory meal. So it's kind of peeping because, you know, he was using my kitchen and making the dinner. He had like 5 sticks of butter that he brought over for these, you know, it was more than 1 stick of butter per person. And everything in there, he was just loading up. But I was like, hey, man, that, you know, I'm excited about this meal. It was some kind of pasta thing. I was like, that seems like a lot of butter. He goes, that is the secret to the Cheesecake Factory. It is, we start putting butter in. And once you think you've put too much butter, you add more butter. And that is basically the secret to Cheesecake Factory. So, you know.
And that's why it's at the top for me. Because I love butter. I have no shame in saying that. So that's why it's got to be at the top for
me. I think we have our editorial question of the week already queued up for us. We want to know this week, what is the best chain restaurant and why? And I want people to stake their claim and really make their case for it. But we'll get to that later in the show. We got a lot to get to, so I don't want to take up too much time talking about why Red Lobster is super overrated as well. You don't eat seafood in landlocked, you know, it's a hard pass. Anyway, we'll get to that later on in the show. Next up, we have Relevant Buzz. You're listening to Briston Maroney. The song is Paradise.
The wait is officially over. Ann Wilson's newest album, Rebel, is out now. Following up on her Grammy-nominated debut album, My Jesus, her sophomore project is jam-packed with 16 songs and features guest artists including Chris Tomlin, Lainey Wilson, and Jordan Davis. Blending her love for God with her roots in all things country, Ann is a true rebel in modern music. Be sure to check out Ann Wilson's newest album, Rebel, available now everywhere you listen to music.
All right, it's time for
Relevant Buzz.
For a look at what's happening in news and pop culture and Emily's quest to get tickets to the Taylor Swift tour. Emily, what do you have for us this week on Relevant Buzz?
I love that you know me so well because I absolutely am talking about Taylor Swift tickets this week.
I figured.
Taylor Swift fans, specifically me included, are ready to wage war against Ticketmaster because it has been a really tough week for the Swifties. Taylor's tour for next year, the tickets went on sale. There's a pre-sale on Tuesday and then there was another one yesterday. And both times, the Ticketmaster website was just completely overloaded with millions of people. She's doing stadium tours and she's doing, I think, 52 shows. So there's roughly 4 million tickets out there. Okay. So obviously, 4 million people are trying to get tickets. It's going to cause a bit of an issue. But on Tuesday, the website was just so overloaded. People spent up to like 7-8 hours just waiting on an online queue, trying to get tickets.
I have so many because I saw this too. Nope. Like people on Twitter, like I've been waiting 8 hours.
I will watch it on YouTube.
Maybe I'm just confused about how the internet works because, like, I can understand if you're waiting a physical line. If you're waiting online, was it just their server crash? Like, what was the problem? Like, why did they have to wait?
I think part of it is a server crash, but you also do have to wait in a queue because you can't let everyone in. Otherwise, you know, you can't, like, not everyone can buy the same spot, you know? So you do sort of have to wait in line, but it was just, I think the server got so overwhelmed and they, like, Ticketmaster issued or tried to issue an apology saying You know, there was like an unprecedented number of people trying to get tickets. But the tricky part is they sent pre-sale codes to people. So they knew how many people.
Yeah, I was going to say, of course, this isn't unprecedented. There's a precedent for this. It's every major concert tour. Like they know how many tickets are available. They know the demand. It's not like this caught them off guard, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then the other tricky thing is Ticketmaster does this thing called dynamic pricing, where the more demand there is for a ticket, the higher the price will be. So Taylor, when she announced this, said tickets for the tour would be anywhere between, I think it was $50 to $500, depending on your seat. And it actually ended up being closer to $80 to $800 for seats because there was such a high demand. So a lot of people, they wanted these tickets and they ended up spending a lot more than they like anticipated. So then they're also frustrated because they've bought these tickets and now they don't actually know how to pay for them because they put it on their credit card because, you know, not everyone's the most financially literate people. Yeah. Again.
Whoa. You about to go in debt over the Tay-Tay tickets? We can't go in debt over the Tay-Tay tickets now. We got to think about your bills. You can't live at the arena. You got a mortgage, yeah, baby.
Some people
you
know might what I'm be saying? Moving into the arena depending on how much they paid for these tickets.
No, I just saw, I don't know if it's a reseller, but some tickets on sale for
$95,000.
I mean, $95,000. That's a Tesla Model Y, all decked out, performance edition.
And that was something that was frustrating too.
That's a lot.
Some people.
That's a mansion in Detroit.
Absolutely. Yeah. People that had been able to get it, like scalpers that had gotten in and gotten tickets, they were already reselling it for, thousands of dollars for not even like the front row. You know what I mean? It's like, you're not even in the pit section. So it was just honestly a whole mess. And a lot of people are really frustrated. Also, Taylor does have a lot of younger fans. So even the ones that did budget correctly, it was like they couldn't afford to go because they don't have hundreds of dollars to spend on these tickets. So it's just been really messy. But what's interesting is, I believe is the Tennessee Attorney General has launched a formal investigation into Ticketmaster. To see what went wrong and potentially just basically legally make them do better when it comes to future concerts. So, you know.
You believe that?
And what law? I mean, I get it too. I guess the consumer protection stuff, but it's like, you know, what law? What, you know, I have the constitutional right to get the week after her album drops. I want to wait no longer than 2 hours to buy concert tickets for. I guess I want my congressman. It's part of me is like, hey, congressman, we got some other issues going on in the country right now. You know, people who spend an extra $30 on Taylor Swift tickets. I don't know if that's what I want my tax dollars funding your efforts for. But and so they're just trying. So this congressperson is just trying to ascertain how they could beef up their, you know, like website.
I don't get it.
I guess basically it's kind of confusing. They're just launching an investigation to see if there was something Ticketmaster could have done better. And then if there is, again, I don't know what legal precedent they have to tell this company and what they could even do to make it, because it sounds like a lot of it was a server issue. So it's like, how do you just make someone's server be better?
Emily, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but they not finna do nothing.
And I know that. Next Taylor Swift tour, I'm still gonna be spending 6.5 hours waiting for my tickets.
Exactly. I just want, like, you know, when you go to the polling place to vote, everyone should vote. Do your civic duty. And there's people that are like giving you little flyers and telling you just in case you didn't do your homework and like, I didn't really look at the school board stuff this year. I'll just take a flyer and see which one. I want the volunteers of that congressperson to be like the little check boxes, like, you know, lower taxes, state transportation, cheaper Tay-Tay tickets, like on the little election flyer. This is all the policies I care about. Yeah, these are the policies I really care about. All right. Well, good luck to everyone out there trying to get your Taylor Swift tickets. Emily, what else you got for us?
So Jeff Bezos, the co-founder of Amazon, announced earlier this week that he plans to donate most of his wealth to charity within his lifetime. He has an estimated net worth of $124.1 billion, which is a number that I cannot actually wrap my mind around. But he has said that he plans to give it away to charities, primarily organizations fighting climate change and to individuals who can unify humanity in this very divisive time. This is kind of the first time that he's announced that he's giving away all of his money. He's donated a couple times before, but this is a really big push. The reason that this is also very important is hours after this interview came out, Amazon announced that they would be laying off 10,000 employees over the next few weeks. And it is just, it's an interesting dichotomy that he's giving away all of his money and then 10,000 employees are going to be losing their jobs. And this is part of a huge, there's been a lot of job cuts within the tech industry. We've talked about that on here. Meta, Twitter, just thousands of tech employees losing their jobs. And it is interesting to see where the future of tech is going to go if all these people are not monitoring websites. I think even if you've been on Twitter, you've noticed, you know, sometimes features are slower or things aren't running as smoothly. So we're already starting to see what happens when we don't have these employees in place. And so with Amazon, which is a huge worldwide company, I have no idea what it's going to do. You know, maybe, you know, they have tons of employees. Maybe it's not going to be a big issue, but I do think it is something to point out that, you know, he's giving away his money while people are losing their jobs.
I think what goes up must come down too. Like, I think what we're seeing, in my opinion, in tech, which is very unfortunate because it's real humans, but you're seeing a correction because during the pandemic, there was so much government money put into sustaining jobs and PPP loans and things like that, that people started actually expanding. Like these stocks, like Amazon stock, I watched it go through the roof. I watched Meta stock go through the roof. And they took that and started, rather than think like, oh, let's be conservative, this may not be forever, they started doing a lot of hiring. So now a lot of those people that they hired, they're cutting. And it's really, really sad because, you know, I just saw a story that someone, I think it was Meta, it was either Meta or Amazon, but they had moved from India to Canada. Mm-hmm. And by the time they made it to Canada, they didn't have a job. Imagine that. Like, that's rough. You know what I'm saying? So we had some rough times.
Yeah, especially publicly traded companies where, you know, decisions are beholden to, you know, people who own stock and want to see quick return. I mean,
right.
Yeah, to your point, Derek, you know, when you go through periods of, I mean, not to do Planet Money here, but not to go all Kai Rizdahl on us, but you can have currency inflation or you can have like speculative inflation where, you know, mm-hmm. I speculate the value of this country, this you know, company or, you know, website or social media service is going to be worth much more than it actually is or is worth much more than it can possibly generate in revenue. And I'll inflate the value of it, you know, because I'm speculating. But a lot of times, like you said, Derek, sometimes when things go up, it's got to kind of level back out. So, but I mean,
there has to be a balance always. Everything's
definitely
balanced.
You know, we have empathy for, you know, especially people in the tech industry right now that are losing their jobs. But I do think it is admirable of someone like Jeff Bezos, who has, you know, just a crazy amount of wealth to commit to giving it away. It's complicated, but it's better. I mean, at least he's willing to make that commitment.
For sure.
You know, because, you know, so much wealth is held by, you know, relatively few people. I don't know how many times in human history, such a concentrated number of people have, amassed such a huge amount of wealth when so many people have almost nothing globally, you know, but good for him for committing to giving it away. Mm-hmm. All right, Emily, you got anything else for us?
Yes, I have one last piece of news, and it is something that I've been thinking about all week. Reports are circulating that Netflix is going to ask Greta Gerwig to direct the new Chronicles of Narnia films. And this is huge for me because I love Narnia and I love Greta Gerwig. So this is the intersection of Emily Brown right here. For those who don't know, Greta Gerwig is the director of Lady Bird. She did Frances Ha. She also did Little Women, which is already a book adaptation, and she did it phenomenally. So I have very high hopes, if she does go through with Chronicles of Narnia, that she will do a good job. The one thing people are nervous about is that it is Netflix that is attached to it, and Netflix has a hit or miss record when it comes to adapting books. So
or just literally anything is hit or miss on Netflix.
That's
like
true.
Yeah. My wife and I,
except Floor is Lava is never
fire.
Miss
pure fire.
It's hit every time.
Hey,
and nailed it. Hit every time.
I'm like some weird study with maps and like animal heads, and they got a crawl. Dude, I'm there for Floor is Lava. It is a huge hit. I want to talk about Narnia real quick, but Derek, that got me thinking. Like, there, you know, my kids love Floor is Lava. We watch as a family. Even if I didn't have kids, I'd still watch it because who as a kid didn't play it?
Yep.
It makes me like, why aren't they just adapting more game? Like, why isn't there freaking Netflix hide and go seek? You know, like you.
Oh my gosh, that would be crazy.
Be so cool. Or like Twister, but like the dots are way further apart, so people are really stretching out. Like Team Twister. I'm just saying, Floor is Lava was such a hit because it took a simple idea and just made it look awesome on TV. If hide and go seek, who's not watching Netflix hide and go seek?
Imagine hide and go seek, but over the span of a city.
Yes,
someone has to hide in Chicago, and you got to find them. And it's like there's different little clues you got to figure out. There's certain spots.
Or there's teams.
Now that would be legend. Yes, that would be legendary. That's called a manhunt, actually. Though,
how about this?
So I don't
how about
know.
This? Yes, it's hide and go seek in like an IKEA. Okay. But yes. You don't tell the IKEA that you're in there filming it. You just hook up everybody with little GoPros.
Whoa.
Look, Netflix. I'm all about. I'm Greta Gerwig fan too, Emily. I I'm pretty indifferent about Narnia, to be honest. But
Sir.
All right, let's hear your Narnia takes. I'm here for them.
Why don't I'm just no? I don't. You're the first person I've ever met that said they don't like Narnia.
Do you want me to get into the reasons?
No, I actually don't.
I personally not a big fan.
I said I don't. Okay. No, I'll play with you, bro.
I'm personally just not a big fan of like fantasy, like dragons and weird animals, and you know.
What's wrong with you and Cameron, man? One guy doesn't like superheroes.
I like superheroes.
Another guy don't like fantasies.
Well,
but you draw the line at dragons.
Yeah, once dragons or like manimals, as I call them, like a goat with a man head or a man
fawns,
with goat feet,
centaurs. Yeah,
yeah. Once fawns and centaurs or dragons enter the equation, I'm out. Like I am.
Sounds like a party to me.
See, that it just sounds, oh gosh, they're going to talk. And they talk with like a weird, like kind of British-y accent. You're like, what is happening here? What is this? All right, Emily. But I do like Greta. I do like Greta Gerwig. I like Floor is Lava, which is on Netflix.
Hold on. One more question before we go on. Why in the fantasy world is there always that fake British accent?
That's what I'm saying.
Like, why is that like the epitome of like fantasy? Like, I need to have fantasy as somebody from Memphis.
That's what I'm saying.
Tennessee,
I want to hear a Southern like, fantasy. You know?
Hey man, I'm finna shoot this arrow at you, man. What up, bro? Wow, like we need one of them.
There was a study. I read the story one time about why, because there's a lot of Disney villains. They all tend to have these like British accents. Like when you're like Lion King,
right.
Like Mufasa doesn't have an accent, but then Scar does. And it was something about like, I think the animators just said like they wanted to somehow like just distinguish that there was like something like that these people were clearly evil, so they made their voice sound different. So sorry to all the British people for all the Americans thinking that you're just the epitome of evil, but I don't know. It is interesting.
I think we're still holding a little grudge from the American Revolution.
We'll never let
like
it go.
Like low key.
Yeah.
We never
but
let it
I
go.
I will say this too. It doesn't matter what like someone with a thick British accent is saying. I'm always like, well, I probably should hear them out. They sound pretty credible. Like You know what I mean? Like, there could be, it could be one of those weird history shows, or like, it could be about, it could be about like anything from like World War II to aliens or whatever. And they're like cutting to different people and different experts, and, or it could be one of those weird Netflix food documentaries. That's like, where it's like a corn cob that looks like a grenade, and it's like everything you eat, you know, fed up or whatever.
Right.
You're like, oh, man, what is this about? What's going on here? And then, as soon as they start throwing stats at you, and they throw one expert comes on. Well, sir, you know that the carbon makeup of the corn kernel is, and as soon as the British expert comes on, you're like, this is serious. And we got to throw out all
like, this. I got to listen to this guy.
I can't even be in the house.
Throw it out the window.
I'm fed up. It's probably too late.
I set the whole cupboard on fire.
I'm probably dead. Okay. According to this documentary, I'm lucky to be alive. All the corn I ate.
Yes.
Know? But as soon as that one British, but it's and they always have like some sort of like patchy facial hair and like a tweed, you know, or elbow patches on a jacket. You're like, he looks a little disheveled, but he seems to be pretty knowledgeable about this corn issue that everyone's talking about, you know. Cornspiracy. What's this guy? So it's talking about a cornspiracy. Sorry for the diversion, Emily. What are your thoughts about having Greta Gerwig adapt the C.S. Lewis, I was going to say masterpiece, but I actually think they're kind of just okay.
Oh, that was maybe the most hurtful thing you could have ever said to me.
Don't you think it's a little on the nose? Like Aslan, like the lion's god, he sacrificed. I get it. It's just, you know, there's
you'll never be gracious, man. Like I wrote, like in grad school, I like wrote about Narnia for a class project. Like I got to pick the topic and I picked Narnia. Yeah. So I will always be on Narnia's side. I'm excited because the way that Greta Gerwig adapted Little Women, she took this character of Amy, who was traditionally not a fan favorite, and she made it into such a beloved character. And so I'm very interested to see how she adapts the characters of like the Pevensey children and Eustace and like all of these characters, because I think she could take it in a really interesting and like loved way. So maybe haters like you will come around and see the beauty of Narnia.
Listen, it's not hate, it's indifference. It's
it's hate. You either love Narnia or you hate it.
What about Lord of the Rings and all that? Like
I'm indifferent.
I mean, aren't they kind of the same?
Oh, dang.
Aren't they kind of the same?
I do really like.
I'm part of the blurred family. I'm a black nerd. You know what I'm saying? So, y'all, look, every time I come on this pod, I feel attacked. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I grew up with Narnia. Like, Narnia genuinely had a very big
impact
on my faith.
You shall not pass.
I didn't watch Lord of the Rings till earlier this year, so I don't have as strong of a tie to it. But it was really good, and I get why people love it. I don't get why people learn Elvish. That one feels a step too far for me, but
that's wild. That's wild.
I respect it.
That's really wild.
You know, I have a Narnia tattoo, so I guess I get it to an extent, but anyways.
You know, Tim Keller knows Elvish, right?
That makes sense.
I've just lost a tremendous amount of respect for it. I just feel like, here's the thing. You get so many spins around the sun, right? You have so many hours in your life, right? I mean, it just is what it is, okay? Like, we don't... And you can spend those hours however you want. It disturbs me that such a great leader of the faith has dedicated an untold amount of hours to learning not just a fictional language, but a fictional language spoken by a fictional species that don't even exist. I don't even understand why people learn dead languages. Who are they talking to with it? It's just a flex. To say you learn Elvish, that's not even real. Like, how... Does he really speak Elvish? It's not like he's saying, it's not like, hey, he learned to speak this really obscure dialect so that he can go in the mission field and talk to people about the gospel in their native language. What is he speaking? Try to evangelize elves? What's the deal?
I bet Tim Keller could evangelize to someone using Elvish. I wouldn't put it past him.
Big facts. Now,
be the only one that
there's a whole community of people. There's a whole community of people that love Lord of the Rings that's never heard the gospel before, and they only like Elvish. So it's an intersection,
an unreached
right
people
there.
Group.
You feel Elvish. Me? That's
people who speak the Elvish language. Yeah, it's like the U version Elvish edition, just for those. Yeah, well, I mean, good for Tim Keller, I guess. Well, Emily, when can we expect this new Narnia adaptation, or is it still kind of just in the works right now?
It's still in the works. So back in like 2018, Netflix announced that it was working with the C.S. Lewis company on this. And that was 4 years ago. And this is really the first solid rumor that we've heard about it. So I expect maybe another 10 years.
So if you guys, I know we need to move on, but if you guys could choose Netflix to invest, let's say they're, I'm going to pull a number out of the sky, $100 million. It's probably going to be more than that. The, you know, the Russo movies cost like $200 million, but let's just say they gave Greta Gerwig $100 million for this Narnia movie. Would you rather see them invest $100 million in Narnia or Extreme Twister, the game? Which one would you rather watch?
Narnia.
Narnia.
I go Twister every time. Or that hide and seek concept.
I don't think you could spend $100 million.
Would you spend $100 million on, per se, for a game of Twister, Mr. Jesse Carey?
You've seen what they did with Floor is Lava. But, I mean, they have these awesome sets.
Floor is Lava cost $100,000. And they are making money and over that. Floor is Lava is $100,000 and imagine. Matter of fact, what do they call that game?
We do it in space. We do Extreme Twister in space.
I'm on board.
Floor is Lava is an Orange Theory gym that they film in at the end of the night.
They flood it with that weird.
they flood it at the end of the night.
My daughter, you know, she's about to turn seven. Happy birthday, Haley. She's turning seven on the day after we record this. But she's terrified of Floor is Lava because they always show the people sink in the lava and like the hand, like in T2, like fall below the waves. And then, you know, right. You never see them again. My daughter's pretty convinced that if you lose Floor is Lava, it's pretty much a death sentence. And that, you know, that the families that you know, that last jump they have to make where it's like into the doorway or whatever. Yeah. Every time she is on the edge of her seat, like, oh gosh, I hope the mom makes it. I hope the mom, oh no, you know, like it really is disturbing for kids. But
I'm more concerned about the people that actually make the jump, but they hit their shin on that concrete slab. That mug has to hurt.
At least they replay it like six times in slow-mo, you know?
Wow.
They're always like in like yoga pants and a tank top, no padding at all, and just cracking that shin, you know?
Or
they land on both flat feet and fall back and hit their, you know, that looks like a back end. This is for real, man. This is high stakes.
Haley might be on to something, man.
I know. It's a dangerous game. But anyway, all right. Well, we'll be on the lookout. Emily, thank you for those updates. Hey, next up, our friend Dev Folletta joins us. When it's dark, you know how to turn the lights on. Never far, you know I'll be on the flight coming home. I wrote this to let you know. Don't be scared, cause it's no my love, roller coasters you can ride on. I'm sticking with you all the way until the time's gone. Whoa, whoa. Sending kisses through the time zone. You're listening to Curtis Hoppy. The song is Vegan Burgers.
Well, today's show is brought to you in part by Crown College, a boldly Christian and academically excellent college providing a lifelong, authentic community. Crown offers on-campus, online, and graduate programs, 18 NCAA Division III sports, international service opportunities, and a vibrant student life. Discover why Crown College is ranked top 3 in America for online Christian education. Visit crown.edu today.
All right. Our guest today is Deb Folletta. She's a licensed counselor and a trusted friend of the show. Deb goes way back with the podcast, the magazine, and relevantmagazine.com. She recently sat down with our own Emily Brown to talk about navigating relationships with family and loved ones during the holiday season and how to deal with the loneliness of the holidays, too. Here is our conversation with Deb Folletta.
I feel like the holidays, a lot of people can feel really unbalanced just because they are maybe traveling a lot and they're seeing a lot of different people. So what are some ways that we can make sure we're not getting overwhelmed with seeing maybe a lot of family members or friends or really just anyone that we haven't seen in a long time?
You know, I think people tend to be pulled in many different directions in the holidays. And I think the unfortunate part is oftentimes it ends up being out of obligation rather than out of blessing and opportunity and, you know, a reason to celebrate and fill your life up. You end up just feeling empty at the end of it. And so I think it's really important for us to, first of all, make a decision to understand what the holidays are going to be about for us. You know, what are the holidays actually about? Is it about burnout and just pouring out until I don't have anything left to give and obligations and a packed schedule and having to make every event and get to every party? Or is it about a time to connect with people that I care about and to connect with God? And so I think when we have our expectations right about what the holidays really mean, then it's easier for our behaviors to overflow out of that. And if it's really about connecting with people that I love and care about and making time to connect with God, that means there's going to be things that I say no to. There's going to be parties, activities, events, obligations that might not meet that criteria. And so when I have a healthy understanding of what the holidays mean for me and what I want them to be about, it's easier to prioritize, to set boundaries, and actually make the holidays about a time of connecting with the people that you love and connecting with God.
I think something that I feel especially like married couples struggle with a lot is navigating the holidays when, you know, there's sort of two families going on there. So
yeah.
How do you approach that conversation with your family and like make sure
that's a good question.
You know, you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, but
A really good question. You know, in the research that I have done and surveys that I've taken, I find that one of the things that couples do struggle with the most is combining their worlds, especially when it comes to traditions. And so the holidays, there's a whole lot of traditions and a lot of different options and things that I've done in my childhood and things that you've done in your childhood. But I really think the important thing is to realize it's not about your traditions and it's not about my traditions. It's what are the traditions that we're going to build together? What is the environment and atmosphere that we're going to create together? Sometimes it means taking a little from this world and taking a little from this world. But ultimately, if we're just trying to repeat our own childhood narratives and traditions, there is going to be conflict. So we have to see it as, okay, we get to create our own experience as a couple. And sometimes that means setting aside the holiday for you and your family, your husband, your wife, your kids. And sometimes that means adjusting things. So, for example, in our family, we have what we call early Christmas, and it comes before Christmas Day so that we can set boundaries around Christmas Day and it just be about my husband, myself, and our kids. And so sometimes you have to flex a little in order to take the best from both worlds, but then learn that it's really about creating your own thing, not just simply carrying over all the things that you've grown up with.
For a lot of people, this can be a bit of like an isolating and lonely time. So what would you say to someone who feels that way and it's kind of feeling anxious about the holiday season?
Yeah. I think the holidays can be tricky, especially because they do bring out loneliness in a lot of people. You know, you realize when you're looking around and everybody seems to have somebody and everyone seems connected, it can especially make your loneliness stand out more than usual. But I think we've got to take that feeling of loneliness and see it as a symptom rather than a curse. Loneliness is a symptom and a sign that you were made to connect. And that's all it is. So if we're listening to that signal in our body, I'm made to connect and that's why I'm feeling lonely, I think it's important then to respond to that signal by being proactive. you know, a lot of times what we do is we feel that, we get depressed, and then we isolate even more. But the best response is to see it as a signal and then do the next thing, which is, okay, how can I be proactive about connecting with people? Maybe I'll invite some friends over for a holiday movie marathon. Maybe me and a friend will go out to coffee or dinner. Maybe I'll call my grandma and have some FaceTime opportunity, you know, talk to her, learn from her childhood. Maybe I'll spend some time with my parents, which I don't often get to see, or my siblings. Like, what can you do to be proactive, to see loneliness as a signal to connect, and then do something healthy about it?
Sort of similar to that, you know, what can someone else do to maybe reach out or support someone who might be feeling that way?
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so important for us to be aware of the people around us in the holidays and the people who might not have easy connections, you know. I think scripture is really clear when it says that true religion is taking care of orphans and widows. You know, when you think about what do orphans and widows have in common, they're usually the people that are lacking in connection of some sort, right? The natural connections of marriage or family. And so I think it's important for us to look around, whether it's somebody who's a literal orphan or widow, or whether it's somebody who's sick and struggling, somebody who's depressed, somebody who's lonely, and to see what does it look like to help fill that need for connection. What does it look like for us to step out of our comfort and our celebration and help other people, connect with other people, make them feel special during the holidays? I mean, ultimately, when we think about Thanksgiving and Christmas, it's really all about gratitude and giving. I mean, it's like the ultimate example of Jesus giving all that he had for us. And I think sometimes we make the holidays about us more than we do make it about other people. So it's a great perspective to go into the holidays looking at what we have to offer rather than what we want to receive.
All right, that was Deb Folletta. Big thanks for her coming on the show. Up next, it's your feedback from our editorial question of the week. You're listening to Yeah Yeah Yeahs and Perfume Genius. The song is Spitting of the Edge of the World. All right, guys. Last week, we asked listeners a very important question. What foods should we add or replace in this Thanksgiving meal? A lot of replies. I want to start off with this one from Goud? I don't know. G-U-O-D. How would you pronounce
it? I think it's Doug backwards. Like, I think his username.
Backwards Doug.
I like it. Either way, backwards Doug. Fonduapalooza. This brings me back to the conversation we were having earlier in the show about like chain restaurants. Why is it Melting Pot should have a moment again? Have you guys ever been to a Melting Pot?
Absolutely.
I didn't like it.
What didn't you like? Did you not like the joy of today? I know. The Melting Pot is a blast. It's like going to hibachi. It's like entertainment while you eat. You get to do something.
I don't know. Like I tried the cheeses. They didn't really taste. It didn't hit home for the price. It wasn't the fact that it was bad. It was just the price just didn't add up to what I was doing. I'm like, so we paid all this money for this? Like, it's just like, I could have thought of a better meal for that price.
I like being an active participant in the meal. Like, I want to go to a hibachi place, you know, Well, you know, the ones where they're flinging shrimp at people and doing little onion volcanoes and stuff. But I want one where you can pay extra and you operate the hibachi for the table.
No.
Like, give me an extra 20. I'll pay an extra 20 and I get to put on the chef hat and I get all the knives and I'm flinging the shrimp. Like, I like the aspect of the fondue where I got control over the meal. You wouldn't pay extra to run the hibachi table?
Yeah, I would. But here's the thing, though. You have to make the meal for other people. So what if your hibachi skills are trash?
Then I mean, that's the fun of it. Who cares? It's like, not your meal. Ain't your meal. What if I hold the meat and the fondue thing too long and it overcooks it? So what? It's part of the experience. I'm all about the fondue Thanksgiving. I appreciate you backwards, Doug. All right. What else we got here?
Evan Penn. So he says, yes, Derek Miner on saying green bean casserole is horrible. He says, what I suggest people do to make theirs better, throw it in the trash. Evan, I agree. Then he says, as for Thanksgiving, we can make a meal of a nacho bar / buffet. Tell me one person who hates nachos. None. Exactly. You know what? I ain't mad at that. A nacho bar on Thanksgiving would be lit. I think maybe as like a, you know, while everybody's, I mean, I don't know how it is at y'all's family, but if a black family tell you that y'all eating at one, y'all probably going to eat at like six. So from one to six, the nacho bar being there, it'd be lit. It would make everything a lot better.
No one dislikes nachos.
That's like a pre-Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah.
For sure. It's the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm with it, Evan. Respect.
Aaron pointed out that traditional Thanksgiving food is the only true American food in his mind, quote unquote. So he thinks it's a metaphor. It's a little bland and beige on its own, but when we invite other cultures to the table, they put their own twist on it and it's actually good. One, I think it's funny that he admits Thanksgiving food can be very bland. But I do agree
Soupy.
Not at my house.
But I, too well, that's
soupy.
The thing.
Everything's too soupy.
If you let certain people cook it, it will be very bland. But when you bring a little spice to
it. Who the certain people, Emily?
You know it's the white people. You know it is.
You knew Derek was going to make you say it. Speak your truth, Emily.
Hey, the truth shall set you free. If you was in Nashville right now, Emily, you could come to my crib. You know what I'm saying? Thanksgiving, you welcome to come to my crib, Emily. We gonna save you. We gonna save you. Jesse, we gonna save you.
Emily's eating a lot of dry turkeys and mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
And bland mashed potatoes at her white family's.
I have gone and gotten like spices from the spice cabinet and put it on myself because it's just like this just isn't enough. Like, and like, you know, I hope my family's not listening to this because I do love them. They try their best. But like, they'll put, like, one time someone, I won't say who, because
Let it out. Come on, let it all out. You gotta get this off your chest.
They made something. They were like, it might be a little spicy. And I took a bite, very bland. And I was like, why did you think this was spicy? And they were like, I used a lot more black pepper than usual. And I said, black pepper? That's what you thought was spicy? And I had this mental crisis where I was like, I gotta be honest, it's confession time, come on, Jesse, your turn next.
I think I'm part of the problem. I'm not gonna lie, the other day we're cleaning out the pantry, you know, not a fun task, but you gotta do it every once in a while, and we had that spice rack, you know, the rotating spice rack. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
It's in the pantry at this point. It's not even out anymore. We got that. I've been married for like 16, 17 years. We got that spice rack, that rotating spice rack for like a wedding gift. You guys know the ones I'm talking about, right? A little cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
There was only one spice that was empty. And it was the crushed red peppers for pizza. Most of them had never even been opened. The lid hadn't even been cracked. They'd have been sitting. I have a plethora of spices, and the only one that was halfway used for 15 years or 17 years of marriage.
Hallelujah.
Was crushed red peppers for the pizza.
He getting free.
The first
Hallelujah. He getting free.
I, that's what I'm doing. Know.
Should have bought a Honda. Come home. He getting free.
That's what I'm doing right now. Feels good. It feels good.
Don't it feel problem. What the Bible say? Confession is good for your soul. That's what it say. Come on.
I mean, there's all kinds of cool spices in there. I don't even know what they are. Yeah, I don't even know what they are. It's a real like in my household, you put a little brown mustard on something. That's enough zip right there.
Let it out.
What are we doing?
Come on.
What are we doing here? Putting the brown spicy mustard on? Okay.
Come on. The truth gonna set you free, bro. I'm so happy y'all got liberated. How you feel? You feel okay? Y'all feel good?
Here's the thing. I've always admitted it. Like, I'm not a great cook, but I have to have flavor and spice on it. And I don't know how I got that way because a lot of my family is not that way. So I think I just broke the mold somehow. And my children, they will know what spices are and they will know how to use them.
Come on.
But it's
come
just, on. Thanksgiving.
That's called breaking generational curses. That's what God is doing right now.
He's breaking
generational curses. It's on you. It's on you right now. The spirit is on you. Come on.
I feel it.
The sins of the father will not be passed to this.
Come on. Come on. We breaking generational curses on the Relevant Podcast today. Everybody at home, I just want you to look to your neighbor and say, we will put spice on our Thanksgiving food. Come on. Turn
but
and look
the
to
right
your neighbor.
Spices. Don't put random spices.
Smack them high five.
On.
Right.
You got to
exactly.
be intentional about it.
Exactly. Turn to your neighbor and say, we will not put raisins on any savory dish. Turn to your neighbor and say that.
Raisins
come on.
Will not enter my
come
household.
Come on now. Come on. Set yourself free. Set yourself free.
Mm-hmm. We're about to get real, people. I need every head out. Every head bowed. Every eyes closed. We're going to be passing around some foods and I need you to eat them right now. I need you to. We need to
taste and see that the Lord is good.
Taste and see that the Lord is good.
Taste and see. Come on. Come on now.
There ain't no black pepper. In the house today, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, there ain't no black pepper.
Let's get it.
All right. Well, hey, that'll do it for your feedback. There's a lot more where that came from. Follow us at Relevant Podcast and you can see the rest or contribute answers. Now it is time for this week's
editorial question of the week.
Hey. I was thinking the food chain thing, but that's two food in a row. How about we do this, guys? How about we say Netflix will greenlight $100 million. For any project. It could be a game show. It could be a reality series. It could be a book adaptation. If you could see Netflix give $100 million to any project, it could be, like I said, a show. It could be a reality competition. It could be a book adaptation. It could be a comic book thing. $100 million for something to get made on Netflix. What would it be? You can send your feedback to us on Twitter at Relevant Podcast if Elon Musk hasn't accidentally broken it by then. So follow us at Relevant Podcast to send your feedback. All right, Derek, Emily, I think we did it. I think we did this episode.
Wow!
Somehow, some way.
All right, a big thanks to Dev Folletta. Also, hey, make sure that you head over to our website every day. Check out all the new content. You can see the new Fall magazine. It has conversations with Dayglow, Regina Hall, NT Wright, and a ton of others. Also, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you know where to find us. And hey, listen, if you haven't checked out the store in a while, you want to head over and see all the new merch that we've got. And if you like the show, you know how this works. Leave us a rating and a nice review. You know, just say something nice. Hey, maybe we'll actually read some of those reviews on the show sometime. So make them funny. All right, that'll do it for this time. I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Emily Brown.
And I'm Derek Minor, who just dropped a single with Aaron Cole and Thizzle called Pressure. I need you to go on Spotify and stream it so that we can pay for this elaborate Thanksgiving dinner that we about to do.
Go right now. Press pause on this and go hit the new Derek Minor single. All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
For listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
And it looks like someone in the kitchen stepped on it.
Relevant Podcast Network.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.